through me.
We thank our guests today. They were Anthony Herron, Tiki Barber, and Dan Wiederer. Thanks to Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka, One Last Day, Sky Point, Kevin Lapka.
Yeah, man.
Cody Westerland helping out as well. Thanks to Ryan Porth, who's been very, very busy today with a lot that's going on. Mark Grody, thanks to you.
My pleasure as always, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Of course. You're always welcome. And the debut of the midday show is going to wait a week. Not so for the Score's new afternoon show. They are here. I think you may have heard of them before. Spiegel and Holmes.
New guy. What's up, new guy?
So I'm like the new guy?
Yeah, you are.
What?
They when Metallica, anybody see the Metallica documentary? The bass player was new, and it was like in his 18th year by the time they did that documentary, and they still gave him crap as the new guy.
Is it Saint James or whatever?
I don't know.
Saint something or other. Saint Anger. I think it's Saint Anger.
Saint Anger.
That was the documentary.
That was the album. That was the album.
They did the video at San Quentin, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We got there.
This is already a weird start. We might get each other's music references on this show.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what that cannot be.
What to do about that. My references just going over people's heads.
Were those homemade cookies?
That was from My Martinez.
Oh, sweet. Those are really good.
Yeah. When you have a fabulous work wife that'll be like, hey, wanted to make you some cookies. I was like, great, but you know I'm moving to a different show. She's like, oh, well, stop by anyway. So she left the cookies. So I wanted to share with the midday show. See my guys Ray and Studs. Studs was like, I don't want any cookies. He's gonna go do his crazy man workout.
Well, he's looking for them now.
Oh, I got you. I got you, Studs. They're right here.
I said I didn't want one at the moment, but I would take one later.
Well, it's an unfortunate reality, Lawrence. They are no longer allowed to be your guys. You have to transition to Shane and Tanny. There is a limited amount of guys that you're allowed to have.
Studs, I got the cookies here, so you're good.
There he comes.
Get to him quick, though.
He's very serious about these cookies.
Well, see, the thing is that Studs does this really crazy workout. Imagine, I don't even know what it's called. Does he even know what it's called?
It's like a Tyson Bagent burpee sprint thing.
Very much so. So
grinding his absolute face off.
He does this like Spider-Man crawl, but he's doing it with 45-pound weights.
Wow. Give this man a cookie. Give him the rest.
Go ahead. I don't do that every day.
Oh, you're
I just
over
call
there.
Them Spider-Man crawls, though, because I was doing it at a gym a few years ago, and a guy's like, you look like Spider-Man when you do that. And I'm like, thanks for giving me a name.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. Like, I've been in the gym, and I'm like, man, to be young again would be a thing. So he's got room for cookies.
I asked Grody this to start the show. Are the Bears in a crisis offensively? And if not, what's their proximity to a crisis?
Looks like you are reading the notes of the Spiegel and Holmes show, because I don't know if they're in a crisis, but I did think, and we'll get into it at some point in the show, I thought Caleb's answer to Jason Leisure's question at the end of the press conference yesterday was very telling. When he started talking about there being an issue of communication, and it was that, you know what struck me about yesterday's game? It was not fun.
Oh, no.
That's why we apologize to Tiki Barber.
I agree with that. We find ourselves asking questions we hoped we were done with, even if just for a year, you know, just for a little while. You're asking yourself all the questions. I feel like they have been exposed now. At least Shane Waldron believes that they can scare teams by lining up three wideouts in shotgun with all those weapons and then run it if they need to because teams are scared of them. And that is not how it freaking works, man. Especially with a rookie quarterback and a bad offensive line, it's not possible. And that's clearly their vision. This was a big week, and he chose to dig in further with this idea that when we line up like that, we'll still be able to run it because you're going to be scared. And now I need to know how high that vision goes.
Well, you talked about the wide receiver, and we keep on talking about identity, and it's a great question, and we're getting varying answers on it. The identity that they wanted this team to be was wide receivers. If you really want to just oversimplify the thing, it was Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, and DJ Moore, and Caleb Williams flinging it, and then you got your complimentary guys like Gerald Everett and Cole Kmet, and maybe Tyler Scott can come in and play a role.
Is he? Yeah. Where's he?
I don't know.
Where's he? You got like the kick returner out there.
It's a great mystery. It's a great mystery. Tyler Scott had a really good camp. They talked him up big last year. He did not have a good rookie year. He did not. He had some bad drops in his rookie year.
The league has decided that DeAndre Carter's not a wide receiver.
Well,
the league has decided that.
Where are the Bears without DeAndre Carter at this point?
That's a scary really question is. To ask.
Yeah.
Of where are the Bears without him? Because he's probably being targeted a little too much.
Way too much. He's being used too much.
But that also is a byproduct of Keenan Allen not being available.
For sure.
He has to be out there and be available.
Yeah. He's a big deal in what they dreamed of doing.
But it was supposed to be Tyler Scott and Velus Jones being those guys that were going to provide the best. But all this right. is it. This is a pivot by the Bears.
They pivoted. I don't want to set Dan off, but I wrote down in my notes yesterday as I'm looking at the inactives, and I go, if he's inactive on a day where you clearly should run the ball, and he's now in your running back room.
Oh, he's not a running back?
But you also have an injury in your wide receiver room, and
yeah,
he used to be a wide receiver. Then explain to me why he's on your roster.
That clinches it. You're right. That was the clincher yesterday for both of those guys.
Like, hey, man.
I have another roster question.
But Velus, stay on Velus for a second.
Yeah.
That is a luxury item. When you know your offensive line is a weakness and you... And your power game is a weakness. Like, you can't keep a luxury item on this roster to begin a season and then dig in harder 3 weeks in. You don't have room to do that.
Well, let me ask this then. If Kieran Amagaje is healthy.
And he's not a better option at left tackle than Matt Pryor.
And he's healthy and active. Like, I thought for sure he would be an inactive. If whatever they want to call it, ramping up, coming off the injury, doing everything we've asked, building his strength. I know he's working on his pass sets. But if this is a developmental year for him, figure that roster spot out. Because he was active. I don't get it.
I think that we need to give credit to our, well, I guess technically my former partner, Layla, on this. She was at, remember we were in Vegas, and she's like, wait a minute, why is he not being put on IR at the beginning of the season? Why is he on the roster? And I figured it was because they thought that they had enough time between the end of the preseason and the beginning of the season to ramp him up physically, but that's on me forgetting that there's also the football part of it, that he's taking a big jump and to not be available. To me, it harkens to a bigger problem, gentlemen, is that for all of the things that the Ryan Poles, Ian Cunningham regime is supposed to be good at, number one on the list is identifying offensive linemen.
Yeah, no, we got a big problem here. Lawrence, last week I posited the theory that these guys are scouting, drafting, and trying to develop offensive linemen like themselves.
You're on it.
That they have found smart guys, leaders, hard workers who are not physically gifted nor brutal.
Whatever
in terms
Quentin
of the
Nelson
violence.
Is, whatever adjectives you use for Quentin Nelson, use those adjectives.
They don't have a single one of those guys in the middle of their offensive line. And I don't know if they have a single one on the depth chart of their offensive line. The one guy who showed some tendencies like that, Tevin, like they've shown a lack of confidence in him and moved him around.
He
and
falls down all the time.
Yeah,
get off the ground.
That snap. Snapshot. You know, that snapshot of the fourth and was it the third and one?
Fourth and one.
With everyone on the ground, and poor DeAndre Swift trying to do the Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl to try to figure out a way to get himself into the end zone. It just isn't working, and it feels bad because I do think that they've tried to make this as easy as possible for Caleb. But that part's really important.
I don't think they have the right idea of what making it easy for a rookie quarterback really is, or even a young quarterback. You know, we've talked about these other teams that have been comps, whether it's, hey, young Tom Brady didn't throw it that much, or young Tom Edison, he threw it even less.
C.J. Stroud.
Too dark. Well, no. C.J. Stroud is the pie in the sky comp that maybe they had, but like young Russell Wilson in Seattle with the Legion of Boom didn't. You know what I was looking at? McVay. Go right to McVay and Jared Goff in his second year. I mean, he passed for a lot of yards, but Todd Gurley ran for 1,300. They were eighth in the NFL in running. And if you remember that year when everything was like, who's this McVay? What is he doing with Goff? They were in 12 personnel constantly. Two tight ends on almost every play. And under center with Gurley in the backfield, and everything could have been a run play. Every single play could have been a run play, and they used that disguise to unleash some stuff in the offense.
If I can give them a little bit of love, because I know it's something that has bothered some people. I heard a couple people ask about it in press conferences yesterday. I'm actually okay with trying things out from a different standpoint, like them being in 13 personnel and passing out of that. I do think that you have to try and keep the defense off balance and go, oh, let's show them a formation where they're going, oh, they're run heavy, and then get them. But the problem is, and it continues to be the problem, and I kept Olin's voice was in my head all day yesterday. Don't think about players. Think about players. Who do you want to have the ball in those situations? And if the choice for me is between
Roshan
and DeAndre Swift, or either one of those guys and Caleb, my choice is going to be with the quarterback first. I'd rather him make the choice and try to get the ball to Rome, or him get the ball to Komet, or him get the ball to DJ Moore. They asked him on that particular play to do something that he doesn't do.
That's a great point.
And I'm sitting there, and I wrote down in my notes yesterday, I go, if that's a design for Justin Fields.
Or Lamar Jackson.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. It's a great choice if it's one of those guys.
You're right. And that's the thing, Lawrence. Caleb's closer to Aaron Rodgers or even Jared Goff. Like he's not a great running athlete.
Strangely enough, you start looking at his comps. Like his comps are Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford.
That's what he's closest to.
He's elusive as hell, though. Like we saw that.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, that's a skill, too.
He's elusive within the pocket, but yes. He's not a running threat in that way.
You also brought up Breeze as somebody who could be slippery and could somehow preternaturally avoid pressure and keep eyes downfield, but didn't really want to take off.
No, and that's what Caleb kind of does.
It's fine.
I joke about it like athleticism in the pocket. Like that's how I talk about it. Where you know you're doing the it's a step to the left, you know, and then a step to the right. Put your hands on your hips. That's what it is.
I totally got that reference.
That's one where everyone got it. But when you look at some of the magic that's made, and I know that we're talking about a guy who threw for 80,000 yards, but you look at Drew Brees and you go, oh, how was he able to be as effective? He was on time. He's accurate. Those are things that Caleb Williams will get better at. And I think that he's getting better more quickly than what it feels like because they're losing games. But I'm just going to move here. That will give me enough time to throw there.
46 yards down the field to Roma Dunze?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And those are the things where you're not asking him to run speed option on an overload.
No.
And for him to look at the defense, and I know every single one of those guys, you could hear it from the way that they talked about it. Every single one of those guys knew that play was going to fail. They knew it. They look because if you were just to look at it, you go – the numbers aren't right, and you're going to the short side of the field.
Sure. You know what, though? They practiced it a lot.
They sure did.
Imagine game planning that and thinking that's a good idea.
In that moment with that field position.
Oh, and thinking that's a good short yardage play. I mean, that whole sequence.
I didn't probably the other plays.
But I did. For four downs, they were in the shotgun with three wideouts. That close. And after Roschon Johnson had picked up fourth and one, he's not even on the field. So they run it three times with Herbert, and then they do that.
Dan, what did Matt Forte tell us about that?
They thought they were so freaking cute, man. We have an OC who has cuteness disease like we've seen before. This part feels stupidly familiar.
And when you think about it, too, when the Colts themselves, you know, the big need play, obviously, late in the game to seal it, they ran right over 56. You're like, but the goal line play, which was an inside zone where they trusted, they gave it to Taylor, and Taylor's like, oh, I'm here. I'm just going to kind of lean here, follow you, the run off a butt. What does Patrick Manley always say? You know, find a butt.
What?
And there, and he's just standing in the end zone. All he needed was a yard. And he just got it was just enough for a yard. It's not complicated.
Look, I know we're going to spend a lot of time gnashing teeth about the Bears. Anthony Richardson is dude, not good at football.
So much arm and such little touch. Like way too much arm. And then he took a lot off the one that got picked that was horribly underthrown.
He threw a ball over an open receiver's head again and by again. 10 yards.
The floater?
Floater.
There were so many times where I'm like,
I hate when that happens at work.
This is not good. Like I kept writing on my notes, this guy's not good. Yeah. This guy's not good.
But that's seven games, Lawrence.
He's had 19 starts since high school.
Yeah. So you've written like you've seen enough where you're like, this guy just blows.
I was surprised that someone didn't go, you know, Anthony, if you were to just step into the throws, you would complete some of those. And it seemed like he was like, oh, I got it. And then he'd go back out there again and just kind of, he's got, like, if you're drawing him up, you go, that guy.
Cam Newton. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And with maybe a better arm.
Yeah.
And you go, can you just throw it 5 yards to that guy?
No.
I'd rather not.
I loved this stat.
A floater instead.
The last quarterback to start and finish a game in a win against the Bears with a passer rating of 39 or worse, like Anthony Richardson, was Eric Hipple in 1981.
The bearded Hipple.
The last time the Bears lost to a quarterback with that bad of a rating, it was 1981. How do they not win the game when the opposing quarterback is that bad against a run defense that's that bad? It's a pathetic loss. It really is.
Did Chuck Long replace Eric Hipple? Was that the question? Was
Eric Hipple number 17?
Maybe.
I remember that?
Yeah, I think.
Or
Dan? Number 14? Come on, Dan.
My memory of Hipple was one of the great strip sack fumble touchdowns in Bears history.
He was number 17.
When Wilbur Marshall just ate him up, like just destroyed his soul and his life, and I think his all members of his family were deported immediately afterward. But Wilbur just took the ball, like knocked him down, took the ball, ran in and scored, and then sat down and ate.
Speaking of this, when I went out to dinner in Indianapolis, there's a kid outside of the restaurant I was attending.
It was actually
in Westfield where the Colts train. Charleston's was the name of the great place. There's a kid outside. He's wearing a number 58. And of course, being a child of the 80s, I immediately go to Wilbur Marshall. The kid said, yeah, it's a Wilbur Marshall jersey. The kid's like 6 years old. He's like, it's Wilbur Marshall. I'm like, where's your dad? Found his dad. I'm like,
high five that man.
That is some good fathering right there. Some good fathering.
Wow.
Bears.
All right, dudes.
Okay,
we have a show.
Yeah, you do.
We have a brand new show.
Let's get it going, boys.
Lawrence, who's on our show? Who do we have
today? We are going to talk with Kurt Warner. He's going to join us at 3 o'clock. Jalen Johnson is going to join us at 4:30. Mm-hmm. We are going to hang out. I am going to be introduced to the mob, and we stumbled upon something. I don't know if you guys noticed it during the game yesterday. There are a lot of previews for it. We are going to create our own Matt Locke segment with Matt Spiegel.
Hi there.
Because we figured we should probably get it done before that show gets canceled in about 3 minutes.
You know,
do you guys understand?
It would be fine if they didn't make reference to the fact that they're doing Matlock. Like, I thought it would be really cool because she's an Academy Award winner. But the whole winking thing, like, yeah, like the TV show.
This Matlock might not be exactly who you're expecting.
Oh, God.
Dan, this is a fun little nugget for you about Matlock.
Yes.
Andy Griffith, after doing 10 years of Matlock, younger than Kathy Bates when she starts doing Matlock.
Oh, my goodness.
That makes sense.
Was that the show with Miss Fletcher? Was Miss Fletcher on that show?
No, that's Murder.
Oh, that's Murder She Committed. She wrote. Murder She Committed.
Yeah, Murder. Oh.
There's always a murder where she showed up.
Yes.
She was indicted twice on that show, I believe. There were two episodes where Jessica Fletcher was the number one suspect because obviously.
Yeah, Miss Fletcher making some strawberry preserves. I don't know why.
So at some point, we're going to ask Speegs to make his Matlock. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I think bit's over. I think we did it.
I think that's probably it. So.
No.
That's
rule of three, rule of 17.
That's the idea. That's what we're going to do. But we're going to kick things off with Tanny's Open because it's bleeping Tanny.
Uh-huh.
That is Dan Bernstein and Mark Grody. He is Matt Spiegel. New guy. I am Lawrence Holmes. I'm the new guy. Score Afternoon, Spiegel and Holmes, next.
This segment is sponsored by Pfizer.